Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I am Nagla Pillay, and today it is my pleasure to introduce to you Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. The topic of today's show encompasses a lot of things that we've covered before, but today we take a particular interest in the subject of external moral authorities. External moral authority. The reason that this is of interest to Sister Denise is because she covers the subject of conventional morality quite deeply through this entire series. We ask that you look at your own conscience, you look at your own set of ethics, your own values, your own internal moral compass, and ask yourself, are you the person that you would like to be? Or is there a gap between the person that you'd like to be and the person that you are? Sister Denise shares her deep spiritual insight into that which has worked for her, and she invites you for this half an hour to look at how you can improve the quality of your life. Thank you, Sister Denise, for joining us, and a very, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
External moral authority. What do you mean by that topic?
The people in your life who present what you should do, what you shouldn't do, what's right, what's wrong, and why, these are the external moral authorities. There's an inner moral authority, which is your own conscience, your own thinking, your own personal ethical policy, but that is built over years. So the young child, first of all, is in relationship with parents. Mm-hmm. And the parents, for a very small infant, you know, the young child is the center of its own universe. And so you just see the love, the smiles of the mother and father. You are fed, you are cared for, you are the center of their universe. And in that case, everything is okay. And so your relationship with them is everything that they are and everything that they do is perfect. You get a little bit older, it's time to go to school, and you are introduced to a little wider world of other young people your age, and then you have a teacher. Very often you have one who is a very important main teacher for you. As you get older, there are different teachers for different subjects, but in many cultures you have one teacher who is really the one who teaches you the way to be a person in community, in the wider community. So that teacher is, just as your parents are a kind of god for you, your teacher is another kind of god for you. And then it can happen also around the same time you get introduced to the religion of your parents, and there are people who are the instruments of that religion, the priests, the imam, the pujari, whatever name is given to the person who is in that office, and they start to teach you about religion and about what it means to be a religious person, a good person, etc. So these are the three substantial external moral authorities, and they really take it upon themselves to inform the child about what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad, and they teach the child, they raise the child, they mold the child according to that society that that child is born into. So this is what external moral authorities are, and the main ones: parents, teachers, religious leaders.
Okay.
And the child assumes that they are faultless and flawless, later on in life, you begin to realize, well, they're just human beings like everybody else, and they have human failings like everybody else, but the child doesn't see it that way.
Hmm. And so this value system that's taught to the child regards it as being the gospel truth.
Yes.
Okay. And then at some point the child grows up and has to or uses it as it does that become the child's conscience?
No. The external moral authorities think that that becomes the child's conscience, and they interact with the child with the idea that you don't have a conscience, we're giving you one. But the reality is the child does have a conscience, and every so often there is a discrepancy between what the external moral authorities say and do and the voice of conscience. And this is where the idealization of these external moral authorities begins to break down. And to the extent that the external moral authorities betray the child by actually being false to what they're saying and giving a disillusionment to the child, to that extent the child loses faith in those external moral authorities. And also, at the same time as losing faith, they also lose respect.
So the value system taught by parents has no impact on the child's conscience?
Not at all. It has a huge impact
until
it betrays the child. And then there's the impact of the betrayal.
Okay. Okay, so what then should one who becomes spiritually aware do the moment you realize the dichotomy or what has happened to you? What do you do?
As you grow up, you change. There is a whole developmental process. And when you're in your teens, it is very normal and natural to, you know, begin to assert your individuality. And you're not just an extension of your parents and your teachers as you are when you're a small child. And as you individuate yourself, you start to look at everything, all the messages that is given to you by your parents, teachers, and religious leaders, and see whether you agree with it. You see, and in some respects you do, in some respects you don't. What becomes a problem is when there is a betrayal on the part of the external moral authorities, and then that creates moral confusion in the child. And then the child either has to become corrupted by that betrayal, or, which is more difficult, they have to mentally separate themselves from those people and become just by themselves. And that can be very good if they are very strong and they have maybe other people who are like-minded and who have not betrayed them. But if they're really alone, then that may cause them to become psychologically damaged.
How has what you just described impacted on what the world has become?
Well, whenever there's abuse, whenever there's a very severe kind of betrayal, whenever there's a lot of lies, whenever there's a lot of violence, then you get into a dysfunctional situation. And there, the child is in survival. You might as well be in a war. It's not that different. And then that produces the character defects. And I think this has been going on for several generations. I can't really say how many generations, but enough to create a situation where people are really disconnected from the real self or the inner self or the authentic self. And so the soul is kind of lost and trying to find itself and very distressed by being in that situation. And I think there are many people like that in this world. And I think this also has caused a lot of people to do a lot of deep, deep inner work and find their strength that way. And this deep inner work has also enabled people to connect themselves directly with the divine. Otherwise, you know, the teaching that people have is that you cannot reach God except through your religion. But now there are people who are saying, well, no, that's not true. I can reach God without my religion, because God is not limited to or by any individual religion. That's a new thing.
Yeah, it is quite a new thing. So I like the expression that you use. It's pretty graphic that people have lost themselves. Okay, now it's a journey to self-discovery, is it not? So what does one do then? Does one take your conscience and shake it up like a rug that's been on your floor forever and say, this works for me, this doesn't? How does one, reset your value system? Is it like resetting a clock? You just change the hands?
No, it's a big process, difficult to do by yourself. If you have someone in your life who is really in contact with themselves, that can be your salvation, you know, that there's somebody to talk to who can really understand what you're feeling, what you're going through, and so on. But that's very good fortune. Not everybody will have that. Some people, they read a lot of literature which is concerning this type of subject, and many people will find a voice, a companion through literature. But you have to do something, and you're in a way searching a little bit blindly, but there are many people who are in search. And ultimately what people are looking for, they're looking for clarity, looking for truth, looking for what's right. Some people may be looking for God. Some people may be looking for the real self. They'll put it in different ways, but eventually I think this search takes them to pure spirituality, because that's the only thing that will satisfy such a dissatisfied soul.
And how would you recognize true spirituality? Because there's so much out there. There's so many, you know, if you're walking through a row of jewelry shops and nine shops are selling fakes and one is real, how are you able to separate that which appears to be from that which is the authentic, real thing?
You know, there's something called the ring of truth.
Yes.
And so, and I've experienced it in a number of situations, that suddenly somebody will say something that's so true, everything stops.
I've had quite a lot of this on the show. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's got a vibration, it's got a tone, it's got a very arresting quality, and you just say, wait a minute, I just got to, you know, kind of feel this thing, and
yes,
it resonate.
Khalil Gibran once said, the ears long to hear what you've always known in your heart.
Yes.
Yes. So, okay, which brings me to my next question. That which you're looking for on the outside, but which you've got to search for on the outside, is it already in there? That you're just waiting for somebody to bring it out, or can you access it yourself without looking outside? Because from what you say, the topic itself, external moral authorities, it's the outside that caused the problem in the first place, isn't it? So can you not park off on a mountain or in a cabin, doesn't matter where, or in your own home, and look inside and discover the truth by yourself?
Well, the obstacle to that is that you internalize the voice of the external moral authorities, and that becomes that displaces your inner voice, the voice of your conscience, and takes over. And that's a difficult thing.
So the voices of the three primary influences that you mentioned earlier, do they superimpose themselves on top of your actual conscience like that?
Or they displace it. and take residence in your being.
So you got to get rid of it?
Well, what you have to do is you have to go deeper than they are able to go to make connection with yourself. But your question was, can you have access to this from within yourself alone, or
by
do you
yourself.
Need something from
yes.
the outside?
Yes.
And I think that there is an ancient memory inside which will present itself to you, but I think it's also necessary to make contact with that truth coming from the outside, so that there is a resonance between the inner and that outer.
So
this is what you're looking for, that resonance.
So there are teachers available.
There are.
There are teachers available. And one will recognize the teacher. Yes. What was it? Was it Boyle who said that one recognizes the lion by the mark of its claw? Is that how one recognizes spirituality?
Sometimes they also say when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
I prefer my expression, thank you. Okay, so you need external education and external spiritual education in order to access your own spirituality.
I don't think it's really that way. There'll be a resonance between the inner awakening and an external validation, verification, and amplification, because internally there's only so much that you have. You don't have the whole thing.
That was a lot of words. explain them. Explain them.
Well, you have an inner sense of something.
Okay.
But you also need an external verification, because otherwise, how are you going to know that's not your imagination? Or you might start off with something that's right and go off track somewhere, and who knows where you'll end up. So you can't just rely on what's in here, because what's in here has been substantially affected, contaminated, distorted, skewed. All of this has happened. So you want to find some kind of still point of reference that's going to enable you to develop yourself internally with reference to that still point.
Do tell us more about the still point, and you'll watch me making myself comfortable. Yes, that sounds quite juicy. Do tell us more about the still point.
Well, the still
that
point...
That's an exquisite expression, Denise. It's exquisite.
So the still point is the one that never changes, the one that always is, the one that's independent of all the rushing around that happens in this world. So the still point is outside this world, and this is why your inner landscape is very important, because it is from there that you can make contact with the still point, not from the outside.
Okay. And a landscape of the external kind, one should tend to water it, put enough compost, tend to it, make sure it has enough of what it needs. How does one take care of one's internal landscape?
Well, the external landscape is your garden and your fields, but there's also other parts which you can only marvel at: the mountains, the skies, the oceans, that are independent of your fingers, but which are nevertheless part of your heart, you know. So I think when you go into the inner landscape, definitely you need to develop some disciplines, cultivate your virtues, hone your skills, sharpen your intellect. All of these things are very necessary, which allow you to enjoy the larger aspects of your inner landscape, which have to do with your relationship with the divine.
And it all ends up back there, doesn't it?
Well, yes.
Yes. So, God's definition of what is right and wrong is very different from what the world has become. Does God's mind and thoughts and feelings, does that become a moral authority for the self? Does God have a set of rules and regulations? You see, when a child is brought up and influenced by those three moral authorities that you referred to, each of those teach a child what is right and wrong. Does God teach what is right and wrong?
I think God does it very differently. I think the external moral authorities would love to think that they are imitating God, but I don't think they are at all. What God will tell you is what you are, and that is, you are a soul. You are essentially made up of purity, peace, power, love, and bliss. Now be that. So it's not a set of rules and regulations, but more a piece of advice and a suggestion. Be what you are and stop being what you're not.
For many, that may be not an easy thing to do.
Well, it's very subtle.
Yeah, because you rip the bandaid off quickly or you rip it off slowly. It involves a bit of pain. Because all of these things, this external moral authority, your words, they become part of your identity, Denise.
That's why I'm saying it's internalized.
Okay, so to remove that what you considered to be, it becomes you. Okay, to remove what has become you hurts you.
Well, that's because that's the ego.
How do you deal with that pain?
Well, you get fused with the ego. And so the erosion of the ego is a painful process because you are fused with it. And as it fritters away, you feel that you yourself are frittering away. But it's just that your identification with it is disappearing and dissipating and getting torn. So the pain occurs when the ego is under threat, you see, because it wishes to survive. And so one has to really distinguish oneself and unfuse oneself from the ego. And this is the way, or the way that you do this is by identifying with the still point of light.
Okay. But Denise, you know, when all of these influential people and things impact on your life, they teach you things, and at that time it becomes real for you. And then you develop feelings about it and them as a result. And then you grow up or go through a life change and then realize, but then that's no longer right. So your feelings change. My question in this context is, are your feelings real? Are you,
well, it's not really your feelings, it's your loyalty
to them.
Yes.
Okay.
And so they will teach you that under any circumstances you must not break your loyalty to them, because if you do that, then you're bad. And so you have to get the idea that breaking your loyalty to them is not the same thing as being bad. That's a propaganda exercise, you see. Because you will break your loyalty to them when they no longer serve you.
You will break your loyalty to external moral authorities if when they no longer serve you. It's no longer of use to you.
Not only that, but they start to become against you.
There's this expression that is used in law, abrogated by disuse. Okay, is that what you're referring to?
Well, to some extent, abrogated by disuse, but also if that person is actually found to be misusing you, then the foundation of your loyalty to them has been broken. The contract has been broken, so you have no reason to continue the loyalty. You see, when you lose respect for someone, you can't respect them. You can pretend to respect them, but you can't actually respect them. So then, instead of respecting them, you respect them superficially.
Okay. Share with us a bit more about the still point. and how it impacts on your, the real you, the conscience.
The still point of light, the being of God, becomes immediately accessible to you as much as you are in your inner spiritually awakened state. And then the external moral authorities are all of a sudden redundant, and they will feel that, so they won't like it, because they get energy from you being or being involved with them. It's an attachment, you see. Now, God will say that attachment is a vice, and the external moral authorities get energy from you when you are attached to them. But once you get it that it's not necessary and it's not even right, then it forces the external moral authorities to reevaluate their own selves, which they don't want to do, because they're convinced that they are the, you know, embodiment of God or something close to that. And when you start going in a different direction and saying, no, well, I have my access to God, so I don't need you, they don't feel good, and so they will react to that situation by trying to make you feel guilty or to shame you or to do something to get you to come back to your former position. But once you've understood something, it's too late. You can't no longer understand something that you understand. So that creates friction, and so you have to manage it as diplomatically and correctly as you can. But, you know, the fact is that you don't need them.
Okay, that itself requires courage, does it not, to make that admission to yourself? You don't need them. Okay, Mr. Denise, on that note, I think we'll bring today's talk show to an end, So thank you so much for your words. The deepest thing that I took from today's show is Sister Denise's description or name for the divine, which is still point. That has created quite a bomb in the studio, and I hope that you can feel it at home. And so this is a very big wake-up call for me, and I hope it is for you as well. We ask you to really take a deep look at the influential people and things in your life, and ask yourself whether what in your heart you know to be true is real for you, or that which you were taught is real for you. And you know, Sister Denise, I think a lot of people consider it to be disrespect to question those influential figures. But Sister Denise is sharing that every rational thinking person owes it to themselves to do so, simply to ask yourself the question as to whether it works for you and whether you're not going against the laws of karma. I think that is the yardstick by which you measure your own words and conduct and thoughts. So thank you so much for your time today, and thank you for being with us, and I hope you enjoyed today's show. There's a lot more to come, and good day.